The Inflation Reduction Act signed this week at the White House went through a lot of changes on its way to final passage. Remember the Build Back Better bill that was going to reshape American society in many ways? Well, that ship ran aground on the Senator Joe Manchin shoal, and it took that senator's participation to finally get something passed that would address climate change in a meaningful way. There is general agreement that that has been achieved, but some issues have been raised by environmental groups and others about components of the Inflation Reduction Act as passed and signed. They include Susan Jane Brown, the Wildlands Program Director and Staff Attorney at the Western Environmental Law Center. Susan Jane, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. Glad to be here with you.
Good to have you. So, big picture, IRA is certainly hailed as the single biggest piece of legislation yet on climate change in the United States. Is the praise accurate on that level?
Well, it certainly is a monumental piece of legislation. It's packed full of all kinds of things, from provisions on clean energy to forestry to private forest management. And so there's definitely a lot in there. Very complicated procedures and provisions on some of those things. Other provisions are a little bit more clear, and I think that's my assessment on the forestry provisions, which I know are of interest to your listeners.
Mm-hmm. So was there, I mean, it seems like in order to get things like the assent of Senator Joe Manchin, that some things that might have been distasteful to people otherwise were included in the bill.
Yes, that's right. There's definitely a lot of permitting and streamlining provisions in there having to do with clean energy development that have garnered the attention of a lot of folks. And as you've also probably heard, there is another piece of legislation that is forthcoming that will include additional streamlining provisions for permitting and infrastructure development. We haven't really gotten a good handle on what will be in that legislation, but the assumption is, based on some earlier drafts of what might be in that legislation, that we're likely to see streamlining around environmental laws in the clean air, clean water, and land management space. So there is more to come.
Which can be a scary thing for environmentalists. I know from covering it in Oregon for 35 plus years, the idea that things can be done to fast track projects.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, I think that there are a lot of pieces of misinformation out there around permitting and the delays that we often see. Most delays can be attributed to lack of funding, either federal funding if it's a federal project or lack of private investment to move a project forward, changes in permitting requirements at the local and state level, and also simply not having enough people in place to do the permitting analysis that is required. And I think it does make good sense to have environmental and environmental justice screens before we develop infrastructure so that we make sure that we put it in the right place and that we don't inadvertently disadvantage communities as we do that. And making permitting easier or faster does not mean that we take into consideration those important issues as we consider where we develop clean energy projects. So we'll have to see where those provisions end up, but it is of significant concern. Again, we want clean energy to fuel and power our country, but we need to make sure that we're doing that in the right way and are thoughtful about how we do that. And we can do that. We can do that in a timely manner, but we do need to make sure that the agencies have the funding and the personnel necessary in order to undertake those reviews.
All right. So the idea is to cut red tape, but you're saying that there's sometimes a reason for the red tape. And you know, the point is to get the points addressed that are supposed to be addressed.
That's right. That's right.
So the point that permitting not directly included in the Inflation Reduction Act set aside, essentially, to be put in a different bill later?
Well, it's a little bit of both. Huh. The Inflation Reduction Act is a lengthy piece of legislation, and it does touch on a number of different aspects of infrastructure development. So in that way, it's sort of a continuation of the infrastructure bill that Congress enacted last fall. So there's a lot of stuff in this particular piece of legislation, but yes, there is more coming. And as we understand now, the more coming piece was really a quid pro quo to get Senator Manchin to support the IRA with the understanding that there would be more. And so I think we can expect to see another piece of legislation. Whether or not that will get across the finish line in the calendar days that Congress has left definitely remains to be seen.
We are talking to Susan Jane Brown from the Western Environmental Law Center, where Susan Jane is staff attorney and wildlands program director, about the contents of the recently passed and signed this week Inflation Reduction Act, which is being given credit for the largest single piece of legislation addressing climate change in American history, but also has a couple of other environmental things that do concern environmental groups like hers. Let's hear your thoughts, your concerns, your questions at 800-838-3760. Join us by phone at 800-838-3760, or send your email to jx@jeffnet.org. You touched on forest management briefly. Let's go a little deeper in there and talk about what is contained in this bill that is of interest and perhaps concern to your organization.
Sure. Yeah. So there are a number of provisions in the IRA that are relevant to forest management. And again, a little bit of a continuation from what we've already seen with the infrastructure legislation that was recently enacted as well. And there's about $2 billion of new additional money for the Forest Service to conduct hazardous fuels reduction projects within the wildland-urban interface, which is an issue that I know we are all dealing with in Oregon, but especially in southern Oregon. There's millions of dollars of new money for other vegetation management projects on national forest lands. There's $100 million to undertake environmental analysis under the National Environmental Policy Act for the Forest Service to complete this kind of work. And then there's also $50 million for the Forest Service to implement President Biden's recent executive order on protecting mature and old growth forests. So a lot of money there for the National Forest System. There's also about $2.2 billion for private and state forest management, which is also great, including grants for community wildfire protection projects and programs, which will help communities harden themselves against wildfire risk, which, as we know, is dramatically increasing as a result of climate change.
So what are some of the concerns you have? I mean, when we talk about hazardous fuels reduction on national forest lands, that usually puts at least one eyebrow up about, well, what does hazardous fuels reduction mean and how big will be some of the trees taken out, for example?
Yes, that's exactly right. And so there is a concern with what these kinds of projects may look like. There are many projects out there that follow the best available science and reduce stand density, removing smaller diameter trees, reintroducing prescribed fire into the landscape to restore resilience. But then there are also projects out there that the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management describe as increasing forest resiliency when in fact they do the opposite. And so there's a concern about what these projects might look like. One of the concerns that I have with this dramatic influx of funding, which is necessary. The Forest Service has been starved in its budget for many decades, and so the new money is great, but there is a concern about how well that money can be spent. When you have a whole bunch of it all at once, accountability and tracking and transparency are of grave concern. And so that's probably my biggest concern at this point is, with all this money, how do we keep track of it? And are we sure that, for example, those dollars are going to the wildland-urban interface as opposed to traditional timber sales that are simply commercially focused as opposed to restoration-based? So we'll have to see how this money hits the ground.
Does it get a little harder all the time to make the cases for taking things at a deliberate pace, particularly when you get people who have been, we talked to somebody recently who has evacuated, I think, six times in the last 3 years in Siskiyou County, California. So people who are concerned about, you know, if we don't do something about treating the forest soon, they're just going to burn down.
Well, it is a legitimate concern, and it's a concern that I share. I think that there is substantial urgency around restoring our forests for climate change and for resilience, and also for doing the community preparedness and home hardening work that also needs to be undertaken by private individuals. I don't think there's really any question legitimately around the urgency of needing to do both of those types of things. And so no disagreement there. The question, though, is just dumping a bunch of money on the problem without having articulated plans that have a lot of public and partner buy-in aren't really going to go very far unless you have that buy-in and that understanding. And so far, the Forest Service hasn't done a great job about being transparent about where this money is going and how it's going to be spent. And they haven't done a great job of working with existing partners or bringing new partners on board, including tribes. And so I think that that is a piece that the agency does need to pay attention to, and just going about parroting and you know, claiming success just because we have all this new money. The money needs to translate into action, and that's what we really need to see.
Sorry, are there no particular projects out there that are quote-unquote shovel-ready? I don't want to call them chainsaw-ready because that might not be the appropriate tool, but I mean, are there no things that the Forest Service can say, we would do this, 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 and this tomorrow if we had the money today?
Well, there is quite a bit of shelf stock, particularly here in our region, in Oregon and Washington, and in California as well. There's quite a bit of work that is ready to be implemented. It's gone through the environmental analysis process. But we also, at least my organization and others that I work with, you know, we've been asking the Forest Service, so where is this money going? Is it going to project XYZ? And haven't gotten good answers from the agency on that. And I know for many stakeholders who are involved in collaborative efforts on forest management, those collaborative organizations and those collaborative projects haven't necessarily seen the influx of new money. We're told it's coming, but we haven't necessarily seen it yet. And when it comes to at least the infrastructure money, which we've had since the end of last year, and here we are in the middle of August, haven't necessarily seen that those dollars hit the ground in our region. So where is that money and what is it being spent on? And that's the kind of transparency and communication that we really want to see from the Forest Service in partnership with stakeholders and tribes.
Susan Jane Brown is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, staff attorney and wildlands program director for the Western Environmental Law Center. We're talking about the environmental provisions, and there are many within the Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA, signed into law this week. I know you lumped a few things in there together. I want to pull some of these out separately. The Private Landowner Climate Smart Forestry Conservation Program, $450 million. Mm-hmm. What is that about?
Yeah, so that is, there are a number of programs that the U.S. Department of Agriculture oversees, and they have a program called State and Private Forestry. And those programs do a number of things. One of the programs that will see an influx of money through this legislation will provide grants to states for forest management, forest restoration, also to tribes and smaller forest landowners to do restoration work on their lands. As you and your listeners know, the wildfire threat is an all lands issue, not just federal lands, but also state, private, tribal lands as well. And so this funding will allow all of those land managers to have access to new money for grants to continue that work on the other side of the line, as we refer to it, to the other side of the federal line. There's also funding in here for community grants for home hardening, community preparedness, community wildfire protection plan development and implementation. So a whole slew of money there for new investments around communities and non-federal lands, which again is something that we need to see. We need to see the land managed on both sides of the line in a way that will restore that resiliency and protect communities.
So it sounds like overall there's a level of concern here that there's some good things in the bill for the environment and some potentially good things, but just a lot of stuff out there that is still sort of amorphous and undefined, that if it is defined in the wrong hands or the wrong direction, could be something that you would oppose.
Yes, and that's the concern. Again, the Forest Service has been starved for funding for decades, and so the investment here that we're seeing in these pieces of legislation is we've been asking for it for a long time. But just dumping money on a problem without having a clear plan of how we're going to achieve the objectives that Congress has set forth and measure those objectives and our progress towards them suggests that we may not get the outcomes that we want to see. And so my hope is that the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, who will also see some of this funding, will be very transparent with stakeholders. And to date, that's not something that we've seen. When we've outreached to the agency to get a sense of how partners can assist and how we can provide input for where this funding should go, we've really been rebuffed by the Forest Service. The response has been, we've got this, we can handle it on our own, don't worry. But the fact of the matter is this money would not be coming to the agencies without the support and advocacy of partners, and now we would really like to be involved in spending that money to ensure that we get what we thought we were going to get out of the investment.
Susan Jane, forestry aside, in the days before we got to a final bill, there were some reservations expressed by the Western Environmental Law Center, your organization, about potential changes or effects involving the Clean Water Act. Did those remain in the final bill?
We're still reviewing those provisions, and it sounds, based on our initial review, it looks like those are not in the IRA that was enacted, but may in fact be part of that second or third bill, depending on how you're counting, that we have yet to see that would be part of permitting reform. And so that's where we would probably see the Section 401 provisions that we were concerned about in terms of waiving state authority to preclude projects. For example, like the Jordan Cove Energy Project that we've talked about before, the state of Oregon was able to say no to that project by using its Clean Water Act authorities, and some of the permitting streamlining or changes that we've had a preview of would preclude the state's ability to use 401 to protect state waters. So we're going to have to see if that ends up in that next package and whether or not that next package actually goes anywhere or becomes law.
Yeah, big question on that one when you make a promise. Well, we'll get to that later. You know, it doesn't seem to work sometimes in Congress. Sometimes, I'll say. Susan Jane Brown is the Wildlands Program Director and Staff Attorney at the Western Environmental Law Center with an office in Eugene in our region, and obviously expressing some concerns about things that are involved in the Inflation Reduction Act, and which is a big bill, as you're hearing, with all kinds of stuff. Susan Jane, thanks for joining us once again to explain your positions.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
You bet. Take it easy.